welcome everybody to another episode of Innovation Crush. I think you'll get that bad joke once we start talking. So in case you don't know, you should know by now, this show covers some of the most innovative people, projects, things that we can find on the planet, and actually sometimes throughout the galaxy. So I got a snicker already. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce today's guests, Joel Zwick and Steve Sunshine. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello. It's going to get really vaudeville really quick. So I guess for starters, just introduce yourselves. You can elect who goes first, but the point goes to Sunshine.
Right now, I'm one of the senior producers of a television show called Extra with Mario Lopez. I've been doing that for about 14 years, and I must say we just won an Emmy.
Congratulations.
So I'm an Emmy Award-winning producer. Very happy to say that.
Nice. Is that the first Extra Emmy?
It is, because it was the first time there was a category for entertainment news in the daytime Emmys. So, and we won it. We were the first one. So it's
congratulations.
Very proud of it.
Double first.
Double first, absolutely. And so, and that's what I do now. The other thing that I do is get involved with theatrical projects, and that's one of the things we wanted to talk about today.
Let's talk about it. We'll get there.
Okay. So I'm also a producer of theatrical properties, and there's one that we're working on right now that's very exciting, called Serrano the Musical. You just stop me when I'll.
No. Hey. Yeah. You.
Yeah. It's a play that was. It was written about 5 years.
Okay, I'll stop you.
It's a take on Cyrano de Bergerac, but it's in the mob in Little Italy, and it's Serrano D'Angelo, poet, lover, hitman.
Right.
And he is somebody who has to educate a young mobster, so that who is uncouth but gorgeous, so that a beautiful daughter of a judge will fall in love with him.
And thus, her dad will have to recuse himself from the case that's going to basically bring down one of the heads of the five families.
Nice. And the next judge in line is owned by the family. And Serrano is thrilled to educate somebody. He kind of likes that. He's an educated man. The only problem is it's Rosanna, the woman he's secretly been in love with all his life.
This is like a soap opera. And how long is the production?
It's probably, I would say, about a standard Broadway length production. It must be run the first
eight
act.
Hours.
First act is about 55 minutes. Second act's about 50 minutes with intermission. You know, it's about a two-hour evening.
So says the director.
So says the director, because it will be a two-hour production.
So go ahead and introduce yourself, Joel, because I have a miniature erection that you're here because of your track record. You too, Steve.
I'm a little uncomfortable. I'll be honest.
Okay, I'm Joel Zwick, and what have I been at? I started out in theater in New York, La Mama, be specific, experimental theater, and somehow moved from La Mama to Laverne and Shirley, which nobody could understand, but I kind of understood it. It seemed fair enough to me that I could go from La Mama to Laverne and Shirley. Then I spent the next 21 years directing television, and then spent the following 10 years directing features, and then, because of my daughter offering me a job to direct at the Disney Channel, where I thought I was in retirement, I've been directing for the Disney Channel for the last 5 years.
So, my daughter, I have a 9-year-old.
Oh, you know me, you know my shows then.
I know, yes. We watch Full House.
All the reruns on Full House, yes.
And
we meet every once in a while. The Full House cast, Jeff Franklin, likes to get us back for a yearly gathering. And nobody can believe that of all the shows that took place in the 90s, that Full House was the one that survived. Full House.
It's weird. I actually posted that on my Facebook. I go... Well, like suddenly, my daughter watches Good Times and Full House.
Oh, that's funny! Good Times and Full House.
Well, actually, Joel,
two very different families.
Yeah, two Joel different families.
Got me my first job in TV because we started in theater together back in New York, and my wife and I came out and stayed at his house, and he taught us how to write sitcoms, and then we had a huge hit with the show called Webster that you might remember.
Yes, of course.
My wife and I produced it, and Joel directed it. And that ran for quite a while, and then and we've done a lot of TV. But Joel, I think you hold the record for most directing.
Nah, I think
Jimmy Burrows? Or?
It's probably Rich Carell of all people.
Maybe, yeah. But
the fact, say you hold the record.
But the fact is that...
our ratings are low.
That's right. Maybe he holds the record.
Certainly, I've directed over 600 episodes of sitcoms. But also, I took an 11-year hiatus, which Burroughs didn't do, that coward.
That's like he Muhammad Ali.
He couldn't make it in the future.
He had to take that time off, you know, when he...
Was that prison time, or was it what happened during the 11 years?
That was basically My Big Fat Greek Wedding, Fat Albert, a couple of other movies that I made, plus some theater work I was doing.
I loved when Mushmouth rapped.
Oh,
that was the rap, funniest
The Mushmouth rap, yes.
That was, so, and it was like, it was, you know, certain jokes in comedies, like, you go, that joke was for me, because that's my kind of humor, and I have a very weird sense of humor.
There it goes. He was a great character. No, so that basically I took a bit of a hiatus, thanks to my old buddy Tom Hanks, who I brought into this town on Bosom Buddies. And he calls me up one day. I'd sent him off a script. I telling him that I think I'm getting out of TV, Tom. Don't like the trajectory of the career right now. You know, the years have played itself out. Maybe I'll go into independent movie making. He calls me back saying, you know, that's a great idea. I have a script I want you to direct. I said, you do? Well, why don't you send it to me? And he sends me My Big Fat Greek Wedding. And it was the easiest job I've ever gotten in my life.
That's awesome.
All about a connection. All about a connection.
Are either of you Greek?
Not I was directing Fiddler on the Roof. It was all my Jewish uncles and aunts, and she was writing my big
Jewish Greek. Same thing.
I think what universalized the project, to be quite honest, Tom was decidedly against any Greek going near directing that movie. He said it will just become so an in thing that nobody else will relate to it whatsoever. He thought that getting somebody else would be a use. So, bingo, there I was.
Now, your name dropping, I'm going to have to name drop. Okay. I have to name drop.
You already name dropped Emmanuel Lewis. Like, that's...
Hello. No, you did. I said Webster. I'm sorry. I said Webster, but okay, you said it.
I personally know Miss Manny. Yeah.
All right. So, cut to after Webster. We get a call saying... they're doing a show called The Julie Andrews Show, and it's in trouble. Could you guys, meaning me and my wife, could you guys come over and see if you could help the show out and write it? Cut to, we go to Julie's house. She has to approve us.
Yeah.
And she knows that we love musical theater. So we're singing musicals with Julie effing Andrews at the piano.
That's pretty heavy.
Back to you, Joel.
No, your turn.
Well,
before you guys continue one-upping each other, obviously you've both been really successful. I was just going to ask, like, from a, you know, after such a both long careers of telling stories, what's you said a word universal. Mm-hmm. Like, what is universal about storytelling, right? Because you've got, you know, you've got theater, you've got stage, you've got television, film. Like, most people can't jump around in an industry and be successful at it. But what is, like, the universal truth that you find that kind of keeps you successful?
Well, for me, which is strange to say because I'm a director, it's about the writing. It's always been about the writing. It's always about the person who can tell. Some that they claim there's only 7 stories, but you better find a way to tell those 7 stories differently every time it comes up. And that's what takes the uniqueness of a good writer to do.
Right.
And then from that point on, it's just packaging the writing. If you're telling a good story, if a story makes sense, eventually the writing will come together. Better jokes will come in, better lines will come in, better character descriptions come in.
Right.
But if you're telling a story that's just a stupid story to begin with, you're in for one hell of a bad week.
Yeah, for me, it's pretty much the same thing. It's the writing, but it's also like, what if? We always want to imagine, what if something happened, and then surprise me. We all want to be surprised, and that's what keeps me connected to a project. When I turn the page, I go, wow, I didn't expect
that,
or wow, that blew me away. If that can still do it to you, it's worth staying in the business.
Yeah, it's interesting to say that. You know, we talk to a lot of businesses on the show, or, you know, thinkers behind ideas, and it's always that, like, especially when you think of innovation, it is, what's the unexpected thing I can do here, right? What, how can we plus up and not alienate the experience entirely, right?
No, you have to come up with those things. That's one great moment we had on Webster, which I think might have been my idea, because it sure sounds like my idea, was was Webster is coming across the floor, and he's trying not to wake up mom and dad, and we can hear him going, he hears the sound and he decides that's crazy, takes off his shoes, continues walking. That's That's unexpected. Right. But the rule of thumb is if the joke is big enough, logic can go out the window.
Right.
But you can't throw logic out the window unless it's an enormously big joke.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of a rule of thumb.
That's awesome. And over the years, right, like what has changed about – I'm going to actually back up from that. We did the rounds of name dropping, which I'm sure we continue to do.
I got more.
There's like a
just started.
There's a physical Rolodex should come
I could drop names you've never heard of. That's how many names I have.
Yeah. Manny Schwartz, right? You know him.
I actually do know Manny Schwartz, but you wouldn't like him.
but networking, right? Networking is a huge, like building relationships, keeping relationships intact. You know, what are some of the principles that when you meet somebody or you've worked with somebody and you want to cultivate that relationship? Because I think a lot of people who are up and coming, like, would love to work with the Tom Hanks. And, you know,
let me tell you, I'm going to tell you a story. Sure. True story. I go back to the University of Buffalo every once in a while. There are a bunch of us that came out of the theater department, film department mm-hmm. there. And we go back and we kind of, talk to the students and tell them, you know, how to succeed. Like, we really know how we did it. But the interesting thing is one of my former classmates said the thing that is absolutely true. They said, look around you. Look at all the people. Look at all your friends. Stay close with them. Because look at us up here on stage. This is like 30 years later, and we still call each other. And now many of us have been successful. We could count on each other because we all started out together. These are the people you really should stay in touch with. Everybody wants to call Jerry Bruckheimer. Guess what? He's not going to return your call.
Right.
Everybody wants to call, you know, Gary Marshall when they used to be in TV. That's who you wanted to call.
I can call Gary Marshall.
You actually could do it. Yeah.
We can call him now, actually.
Yeah, really. Let's give Gary a call. But the point is, make your connections now among your peers because your peers are going to be the ones who are successful and it'll be meaningful. And stay in touch. It's the best advice.
That's great.
I agree with that advice. The fact is that the other advice is that you take opportunities when they arise. You don't sit around saying, well, maybe tomorrow I'll get a better offer, or that wasn't exactly what I was looking for. Bullshit. You got to get out there, take an opportunity, and prove your worth.
Yeah. And say make, yes.
You have yeah. to say yes, yeah. get going. Yeah. You'll start to meet people who are on the upward path. And some of those people will remember how good you were when you right. did your job there and take
this
you to the next job.
This is why I told pornography for that's so many why, years.
So that's 11 so year, many, 11 year hiatus.
That's right.
Year.
And that's why, that's how Steve and Maddie became friends. And when I was involved and they were talking about getting out to LA, I said, I think I got you. I hooked you up with Stu Silver. We worked on a pilot script for them so that they could prove their writing ability. And bingo, they were in town doing work. But that was based on a previous connection.
Yeah.
That came out of someplace else.
So it's all really organic.
Very organic.
I think some people set out, especially when they come to town, right? Let's call it that. They're so goal-oriented that, and they're so focused at the distance that they're not paying attention to...
The moment.
Right.
Absolutely.
Very much so.
No, and that's interesting you said
that. It's like, do the work. Do right. the work. The work will speak for itself. Don't look for the result. The work is the result.
It's interesting. You get to a certain point in your career, you realize that it's all been about process. It's never been about the end result.
Right,
right from the get-go. I was lucky in that I never had goals. I don't know how I got to right now in my life, I kind
it's
of think...
Sad, that's Joel, a quote actually. For the promotion of this episode.
Yeah.
I never had any goals.
That's why I keep on thinking, why me? How the hell did I even arise out of this? Because there were no goals. Growing up as a lower middle class kid in Brooklyn in Sheepshead Bay section, I wasn't thinking about making movies, making theater, making anything.
Right.
And all of a sudden, little by little, I started to find myself taking opportunities that people offered me because they thought I was cute or they thought I was funny or they thought I was stupid. Whatever reason they...
Right.
They wanted me to join in on their little thing. I would do that. And little by little, I was just recently trying to track out who and where were those people in my past that actually informed what I became.
Yeah.
And it was quite a thing in my brain when I finally worked it out, who the hell those people were. You want to know who they were?
Sure.
You care?
Yeah.
Okay. High school, junior high school, met a lovely little girl. Her name is Carol. And... she was driven. She was going to make it. She was going to make it in the music business. That's how she was going to make it. And when we got to high school and rock and roll kicked in, she was going to be in rock and roll. End of story. So she decided she was going to have a quartet. And we developed a quartet at Madison High School called the Cosines. And that lead singer was Carole King. There's a moment.
Nice.
All right, I got a name drop again. Okay. Here we go. Oh, again. Okay. I got to go back
Carol
and
King?
Then. Hey, hello. Right.
So I was sitting around with Blake Edwards.
Blake,
while,
him,
while
Blake.
Julie is playing the piano. I said,
and Carol was singing.
And Blake is
tapestry.
Over there. And Blake said, did I ever tell you I liked your writing? And I said, no, actually, you told me you didn't like my writing. He said, well, I didn't really mean that. That was one script I didn't like. Would you like to write a Pink Panther with me? And my wife and I did. We wrote one of the Pink
Which
Panthers.
Which one?
Back to you, Joel.
Yeah, it wasn't one of the
it
big...
It wasn't?
It was,
all right.
It was
all
the
right.
Benigni.
It was
Benigni.
Roberto Benigni, son of the Pink Panther. I'm not saying it was a great movie, but
no,
the
but
idea...
the fact that the opportunity came...
of writing a Pink Panther yeah. movie.
You do it. You do it. You do
it was
it.
Great.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
great. All right. No more. If you name drop again, I'm going to have to...
My whole life is replete with yeah. name dropping. Right. So I don't know how I stop. But
Chris,
anyway...
how about you? Name drop.
Come up with a name.
I barely know you guys, so that's all I got.
Yeah, but basically, you can start to track out... So my connection with Carol paid off a little bit, and then it came onto another connection that took it to another connection. I just kept...
But these are your peers, and that's
right.
the idea.
Yeah. You
it's not
start
like
your
going
peers.
To the big people who yeah. will never get to
I was going
to
say, did either of you ever have mentors? Because I'm always like... it's a catch. It's a two-sided thing.
I consider my mentors to be Gary Marshall and I guess maybe Jay Sandrich, if I had to come up with the two. Jay was the director of the Mary Tyler Moore Show,
mm-hmm. okay.
that period before I got into TV. And Gary Marshall, of course, besides creating Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley, went on to a major career as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
But he was the one who first gave me my chance to direct Laverne and Shirley. So,
wow.
And he was right there, you know, supporting me. At a time in my career that I had no reason to believe why anybody would
Oh, that was a huge transition.
Like, it was a huge transition. And Gary saying, hey, I think I'll give you a shot with the girls next season.
Right.
I had no idea who the girls were. But I thought, hey, that'll be fun. I was wrong. But no, the girls turned out to be fine. They were so talented to make no difference.
Right.
With Lenny and Squiggy, Michael McKean.
Hello.
Hello. Did he ever turn out the hello jokes? Put me away every time those idiots showed up on an entrance, and I knew what was coming because I was directing the episode, and it would still surprise me, and I would still laugh every time they kept bursting through the door with their hello jokes.
Same question, though, as far as...
Mentors. Well, Joel is one of my mentors, and clearly we knew nothing about TV. My wife and I really came out of a theater experience in New York, and that's how I know Joel. Joel was teaching... at Queens College, and I was a graduate student there.
Right.
And though we never worked together, we got to know each other, and we started to, work on similar things. I wrote a play at the time. Joel liked it. Was kind of putting staged readings together.
We put staged readings together. It was a good play. Breaking In.
Yeah.
Breaking In.
And that's how we really started to bond. But everything I learned from TV, I learned from Joel. And one other person, a wonderful, crazy guy named Harry Crane.
Oh, God bless Harry.
Harry, interesting guy. He created The Honeymooners.
And wrote most of the episodes.
Wrote most of the episodes. He wrote for Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis and Frank Sinatra. When Frank, with the Rat Pack in Vegas,
right.
Harry wrote their comedy material, their incidental, their sketches and everything. He wrote all their stuff.
But a lot of that had to do with Gary Marshall, who had determined that all the shows he had running, he was going to bring in an old-timer onto the crew. He wanted an old-timer's voice of how television was done in the 60s for the people who was now creating it in the 70s. And Harry Crane was brought on to, I think I had him on Mork and Mindy. Did I have him on Mork?
You had him on... Didn't you have him on Laverne and Shirley?
Maybe it was Laverne and Shirley.
You had him on all of Gary's
shows. He brought
in
Milt Josephsburg, who had been the director and exec producer of the Jack Benny Show.
Yeah.
So he wanted that legacy. He wanted the industry
to understand. And Harry gave Gary Marshall his first job.
That's right.
And Gary never forgot. And that's another thing. Peers.
Yeah.
You know, they work together.
And that's one of the things I have written on my piece of paper is just that idea of team building, right? And I look at kind of... your careers as, you know, if you look at Silicon Beach today, where you've got the technology boom, and there are, you know, buildings filled with startups and people building teams and networking and finding mentors and putting money and budgets and teams together, and it's very similar to like the what happens in Hollywood, right? Like
very much so.
You are doing that exact same thing. How do you, out of your network, when you have a project, like how do you go about building that team? You know, that's going to capture the voice of, you know.
Oh, you really do that a lot, Joel.
Well, I do it a lot, but years and years and years, I've developed people that I know are go-to people that if I have to do a show, I call up my cameraman personally and say, guys, I got a show coming up. I want you all on the show. And my job is made about 10 times easier by bringing in my people. who would work with me show after show after show. But I think if you're at the beginning, you're a bit, pretty much at the...
But you're also, you know, it reminds me of, you're always auditioning, always. And but you have to see auditioning as doing the work, not being on and trying to impress somebody.
Yeah, you got to stay with process.
The way you succeed is the work. And where somebody says, my God, I got to work with that person again. That's who I want. Let the works, if you speak for the work, it's not good. If the work speaks for you, you're in.
Well, that's well said, Steve.
Thank you.
You ever think of writing?
Not anymore.
Okay.
No.
No, but that's the truth. The truth, boy, it really is. I stay process-oriented. I've been process-oriented right from the beginning. My belief pattern is that if the process is the best process I can create for a given episode of a show,
right,
I will get the best possible product.
So what are some key principles to process, you know, process development?
System. Right. System. You have to be a systems kind of a person who understands the system by which something's being created, be it either a Broadway musical or a TV sitcom or a movie. You must understand the system, and then as a systems person, you must make that system work as efficiently as you possibly can, because loss of time toward bad management is a killer. We need to spend that time with creative pursuits, trying to take that we didn't want, stretch yourself there. Let's try this. But if you're fighting for your life because your system is crazy, you're in trouble.
But also, it's like, you know, sometimes people forget, even successful people forget why they wanted to get into this business in the first place. Mm. It wasn't money and it wasn't fame. It was fun. It was absolute fun, and there's nothing more enjoyable or infectious than seeing somebody who loves what they do and is having fun. If it looks like you're pulling your hair out all the time and you're getting a heart attack, not very attractive.
Right.
You're attracted to people who really enjoy it. It doesn't mean you won't have days like that. You'll have many days like that. But overall, that fun and joy is not a small thing. And you know, if you
but that's a personal. You know, everybody comes to this thing with their own personality intact. One can develop,
or not intact,
or not intact. And you're right; those people who are basically pills don't work as often. Yeah. Those people who are up, buoyant spirits, who keep the actors happy and moving, and, because we're all coming to work every day. The key is if we can.
How
laugh.
Do you do that though? Like, how do you know when you are face to face with production woes? You know, things break or somebody show up. Like, how do you maintain the balance of staying positive, or is it like just a key job requirement?
It's a key job requirement as far as I'm concerned. It's a big joke is because big things never upset me. If it's a big problem, you got no choice. You got to dig in and figure out a way to solve the big problem. It's the little things that can get you exploding.
The spelling error.
That's right. That's what all of a sudden gets you nuts.
Absolutely.
But not the big things. No, the big things have to be dealt with, and they must be solved. And we will find the way to solve them through a process that gets you there,
right?
You know, although the writers come from a little bit more of a result-oriented place. They've written words that they expect to hear, and they're hoping that they get the effect they're looking for from the words they've written.
Sure.
So they're listening for that, and I'm not interested in their results. I'm trying to get the process to a point that not only will they get their results, they will get more than they were hoping for. And that's why I think I've been able to work for 47,322 years now.
5,025
You're in,
No,
exactly.
That's true.
No, that's interesting. I mean, just because I think it kind of also shifts the perception of what a director is, right? A lot of people, I think the perception is it's the person who
tells you what to do.
Yeah.
No.
It's the, you know, it's the angle and the lighting and, you know, action. But it really, like, it is
inspiring performance. Well, there are actors, there are directors who are actors-directors, and there are directors who are technically more efficient. I had one great experience. I was directing Laverne and Shirley at the time that Steven Spielberg was directing 1941. And Penny Marshall and Michael McKean were in 1941. Right. So he asked if he could come down and watch an episode of Laverne and Shirley being shot. So there I was having Steven Spielberg shadowing me on a Laverne and Shirley. Mm-hmm. 20 years later, I'm at a birthday party for name-dropping Tom Hanks, and I run into Steven Spielberg. And I said, Steven, do you remember when you shadowed me on Laverne and Shirley? He says, of course I do. I said, well, I thought you were there primarily to learn a little bit about multi-camera and how all this stuff gets shot. He said, nah, I was there trying to figure out how you direct comedy. And he says, you know what? He says, I never figured it out, because that wasn't his spirit. His spirit was he was a visual director.
Right.
He would tell Penny Marshall, okay, you've got this speech. I need this speech in 42.3 seconds. Go. Right. That was his directing of actors. He needed to get it at a certain time frame where I'm going, you know, let's go play and see what you come up with.
Yeah.
All right, he name dropped again.
What do we get? We
got Steven
Spielberg.
I got a good one, but I don't think you have time for it. Okay, so I'm on the Jon Stewart show.
Jon Stewart wants
to know how I got the interview with Barack Obama before he did.
There's a name. Okay, I'll give you a name. You won.
That's it.
I'm leaving the story right there. It's a true story.
Just take your headphones off and just throw them.
That's it. You're going to start to throw the President of the United States in my face. Then I'm not going to respond.
What was the original question? I can't remember.
I don't know. Let's move on, shall we?
Okay.
So, again, you know, I love, like, looking back at sort of, you know, this history of classic storytelling. Like you said, you know, the gentleman you mentioned earlier who wanted to bring in some of the old heads to maintain the voice, right? When you guys look at the ecosystem today and you start seeing Hulu or Netflix or YouTube creators, and, you know, you've kind of been birthed in traditional television, film, theater, you know, how is there a need or a want to sort of balance it out and, like, capture the digital space in any way? Or
yes, I think you've got to capture the digital space. It's what's happening. It's the future. It's not going anywhere. It's only going to get bigger. They have the means of distribution. And anytime you got the means of distribution, you just have to buy or create your own product.
Right.
And at that particular point, you've got a leg up. What it does is give millions of more people an opportunity to get into the business. But however, you're now competing against millions of more people than I competed
against. Also, the television set is a delivery system. It's not a medium anymore.
That's all.
It's a delivery system for so many platforms. And I think the more the merrier. I think it's exciting. It's an exciting time to be creating because you have no excuse to say, well, I can't get into ABC or NBC or CBS. There are only three buyers. And I get that's what they used to say when we were starting. Only three buyers. You piss off two of them. You have one left and then that's it.
When I go to colleges to speak, I say, listen, you know, you've got a cell phone. You could make a movie on a cell phone. You can make a movie on a cell phone.
Kit Carson did it.
And if you're not doing that, let me tell you, somebody else is doing it.
Yeah.
And the one that's doing it is the one who's going to progress in the business and find themselves perhaps with a chance at a very nice livelihood.
We did a special effects show in 1990 from the old Sony lot. It was Lorimar at the time.
Oh, God.
And it took what took us almost a month to do the special effects. I could do it in a weekend in my garage now. So it's changed so drastically and dramatically. If you don't get on, you know, the ship has sailed.
Right.
You better be on it. That's what it's about. And it's exciting. I don't find that threatening. I actually find it exciting.
Yeah, it's funny because there's a quote I like, which is like, it's not that people don't like change. They don't like transition. Right. It's like, when they first started doing self-checkout in the grocery store, I'm like, no, I want service. I don't want to, I came here to.
Or they want to know the rules. I just, you know, I don't like, we're in a time now, there are no rules. And that's scary.
Right.
And so people say, I don't care what the rules are. Just tell me what the rules are so I could follow them. But the rules are, make up the rules. And that's, you know, very challenging.
That's success in innovation anyway.
It's big time.
Like you break the rules in order to create something new and interesting, you know.
Yep.
You follow the rules to repeat what has already
been. Oh, yeah, and everybody's scrambling right now to find out exactly what this new media is going to mean, how big it's going to become between, you know, Hulu and basically Netflix.
Yeah, Netflix. Netflix, for the first time, you're getting a subscription service that is up for and winning Emmys. I predict, and it's not a big prediction because it's going to happen in the next year or so.
Oh, because you won an Emmy, now you can you can predict all the rest of them.
Mr. Big Shot.
I predict all the time. You know, my record isn't that good, but I predict. Something on YouTube is going to be up for an Emmy.
Well, of course it will
be. And something on YouTube will be up for an Oscar.
And eventually there's going to be...
It just will.
They're going to all of a sudden have categories specifically for YouTube kind of things, which will then become make it mainstream. And once it starts to become mainstream, it's like anything else.
Yeah.
It's going to all of a sudden cut out. The next generation is going to have to find how they can reinvent in order to get themselves
People are going
to
say that it's unfair because we can't compete with them. But, you know, I know somebody said the same thing about HBO when that came on. They said it's unfair. They don't have to. They don't have advertisers. They don't have to do what the networks do. It's not fair. Well, right. You know, if you want fair, go to Pomona.
It's like from books to radio to film.
Everything.
To, you know, nothing ever died out. Like, it's, we still consume all that stuff.
Sure.
Right?
And, that's absolutely
and
correct.
There's just how it's delivered.
It's funny because there's almost like, you know, I used to work for a very large YouTube network. And, you know, we did 2.5 billion views across the network every month. But there was always still this sort of us against them mentality.
I'll
like
bet.
The traditional entertainment industry versus, you know, digital creators. Mm-hmm. You know, and then there's their own award shows, the Streamy Awards.
That's
or
right.
All these different things that kind of like we're going to celebrate ourselves. But I like that your prediction is that more and more will start to take the leap.
No question about it. I just did something for Awesomeness TV.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea what Awesomeness TV was, but I did this thing called it's a pilot. It was a series for called Richie Rich, based on the character Richie Rich. And basically, it was being 13 episodes were being done, mm-hmm. half-hour episodes, but being shot in installments so that one could air 7-minute installments of an episode so that they can stream it
right.
and keep it going. And and DreamWorks bought them.
Right.
DreamWorks just bought Awesomeness TV.
Yeah.
So they're buying into the possibility.
It's a big purchase, too.
It's a big purchase, and they're trying to basically buy into the fact that this is a world they're either going to get into or they're going to be cut out of. And if they cut out of it,
right.
That goes their bottom line big time.
It's like Blockbuster versus Netflix.
Very much so.
It's like, we don't want that stuff.
That's right.
How have audiences changed, right? Like, you know, when Webster was on or Mork and Mindy, it's kind of like you have very few choices. Your water cooler conversation the next morning was like, did you see? And now, like, I may watch all of the episodes of House of Cards.
In one sitting.
Yeah, and you're on episode one, and I've lost a bit of dialogue.
Well, I think viral has become the new water cooler. I mean, that's
to
kind
some
of,
degree.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of like when something goes viral, that's the equivalent of, oh, wow, the whole
everybody kind of hooked into something.
Knows this.
Yeah.
Right. It's their water cooler moment.
Yeah.
Audiences, I think, are all the same. Always, but it's we know
humanity is the same.
We maybe
humanity is the same
than we ever did.
But the fact remains,
we're exposed to so many more things now. So I think it's harder to surprise. It's harder to sustain laughter and sustain storylines because there's so much of it out there. But it challenges.
Well,
never been more challenging.
The new generations have been trained in a much more concise ability to concentrate. To say the least, I know that the Disney Channel has an unwritten rule that there's no scene that can go longer than 4 pages because they don't think that their audience can sustain. Now, when I was doing Perfect Strangers or Bosom Buddies, we would have 12, 13-page scenes. No longer. They got them chopped up so that basically it keeps the thing moving because the young audience today demands that because they're basically, you know, catching 3 minutes of this on the YouTube, 3 minutes of that, 2 minutes of that. If they want to sit down to a television show.
Yeah, everything has to move.
My wife thinks it all started with Sesame Street. She was a writer for Sesame Street.
Oh.
She was a lyricist. And she said they used to keep, I don't remember the exact time, but it was something like you couldn't go over a minute 10 because they felt that was the attention
Same
span.
Thing.
Wow.
And I think my wife is convinced that's why we have hyperactive kids. And it may be true, but it's the same thing now. But it actually probably started with
Does
Sesame
she know
Street.
If the Elmo guy is guilty? Okay. All right.
Yeah, no. It's,
well, tickle him and find out.
Tickle me.
And also, it's the pervasiveness of media. That's all. There's so many choices now to be had by virtually everybody that you're no longer. I mean, the network TV, which used to have Bosom Buddies, went off the air at that time with, I think it was a 32 share and 18.1 rating off the air. Because it wasn't holding up. Right now, the Super Bowl doesn't get an 18-32. So it shows you the nature of how things have changed. And Hanks is still pissed off at Magnum PI, which he says was the show that knocked him off the air. And I said, Tom, look at the career you built. Thank God you didn't have
blessing.
That show on. Yes, I
well,
said.
Well, we
said,
knocked
Bosom Buddies reunion.
Hello. Webster knocked Dukes of Hazzard
off the air.
Really?
That's
yes,
right.
We did. That's when we became a hit in about the sixth week or something.
Yeah.
I feel so torn. The General Lee or my black brother.
Ooh, you got to stick. You stick with your black brother. He's a very nice kid, Manny.
That's the best story.
He went to college.
That's never been told.
Yeah.
I will tell part of it, but only part of it. This is a kid who took care of his mom, took care of his brothers and sisters, made sure they went to school, made sure they.
While he was. while he was Webster.
After. What I'm saying is he saved his money. He didn't drug out. He didn't party out. He didn't go bankrupt.
He graduated from Emory.
He graduated from Emory. I mean, this is exactly the poster child of the way it should happen, but rarely does. And that's Emmanuel Lewis. He was a great kid then. He's a great adult now.
Is that an internal thing, or is that like the world kind of taking effect on
his mom.
I think it's internal. I think it's basically
his mother was great, who was not a stage mom, but a real mom who made sure he knew right from wrong, and he was a kid when he was supposed to be a kid,
right,
and kept him out of a lot of things. I mean, she was a Margaret. Remember?
She was a very strong-willed woman.
Phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And I think that's where it comes from. Yeah. Who knows where it comes from? But he is a success story. He's an amazing.
Yeah, my belief had always been that nice people going into the business remind nice people coming out of the business. Success does not change you. If you're a schmuck coming in, all the money in the world will not make you a nice person.
It's like one of my favorite Wayne Dyer quotes. He's like, if you squeeze an orange, what happens? The orange juice comes out. And it's like, what happens when pressure's on you? Like, if you get all belligerent and cuss everybody out, like, that was already there. Like,
It was there. Exactly. Nobody created that for you.
So bridging the digital gap, right? I think it's really interesting that you guys are going almost backwards in terms of, backwards is the wrong word, but to an older art form.
Definitely.
The stage, right? And musicals.
Mm-hmm.
But doing it with a very new platform. You're on Indiegogo, correct?
Like, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just tell us about, like, how you got to that decision. Because even when I look at the website, again, team building, you've got an awesome roster of
starting to build
behind the scenes.
And basically, we've been doing workshops of Serrano now for maybe it could be 4 or 5 years. Each workshop garnered us rewriting of what needed to be done. Better songs, get rid of songs, add new songs. All of a sudden, we'd find a piece of talent that gets associated to it. And bingo, we're starting to build a cast of superlative actors who now love this show because they've been part of its incarnations for so long, and they stick with us, and this thing is going to get to Broadway. It is really a special show.
The interesting thing is all the producers on this all come out of film, music, TV.
Give us some examples, because when I read the credits, I'm like, this is all stars.
It's a heavy load for somebody simply out there trying to raise some money at this particular point. But we were not New Yorkers. We were not a New York-based organization. We were built out of California when we started creating this whole thing. And basically, New York is not all that pleased with people from the outside, unless you got billions of dollars that you're wishing to dump into something.
Right.
It's a very hard sell to convince a New York theater like the Schuberts or the Nederlands to put your show into their theater when you're competing against New York diehard producers. So we had to find a different road to take because we cannot let this project die.
But one of the things we have in common is we all like musical theater. We all like theater, and many of us started in theater, thought our careers would be there. Of course, it was very hard. You know, it's hard to make it in any part of the business, and you're lucky if you could make a living in any part of this business.
Yeah.
But almost all of us had a feel for theater and a love for theater, and we wanted to do it. And we never did it because we're out here and it's not the same thing. And when this play came along and it seemed to be the right project, and Joel locked onto it and loved it and started bringing actors to the fold, and we started to have readings and stage readings, and we put our own money into it because we thought, like, listen, no one's going to believe in it unless we believe in it. And so over the past 4 or 5 years, we put quite a bit of our own money into it to see what we had. And we think now we have something that's really ready to run. We've never done a full run. It's always been workshops and staged readings. And so now we're saying, now we need to bring the public in for a couple of reasons. Number one, we want to see if they respond to it. We want to see if we have something with it. And you can get in on it you can give us $5,000 or $10,000. You can give us $1.
Right.
But whatever
it is. The perks are different, though.
The perks are a little different. But they're still perks.
Right.
You can still get a perk. It's not as perky as the $5,000 perk. But there are a lot of things to get. And we want to see if the public kind of responds to it, to tell us we think we have a hit. Well, everybody
does
something.
You see, that's a producer thing. The director thing is they will respond, and we do have a hit. I cannot be sitting around thinking, waiting to find out what the audience thinks. Every time we've done a reading of this thing, people have been blown away.
Yeah.
Just blown away.
Just incredible.
Because, once again, the talent pool we pull together is like, what the hell? Who they got on that stage? You know, yeah. you couldn't buy that crew, that cast, if you actually had to do the show.
That's an interesting point, though, the yin and the yang of creating something, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody has to be a little bit more business-minded about it all, and mm-hmm. someone else has to be very, very creative and free to do their thing. How do you guys maintain that balance? Like, do you trust each other enough? Do you argue? Like,
no, we never argue.
We don't argue, but we have discussions. We have discussions. You know what? We've worked together for so long. This goes back to working with the, you know, because this is something that came out of love of the theater.
Right.
We decided to choose. My wife wrote, she's a screenwriter and a playwright. And she wrote the project. It's something that she always wanted to do. She got Joel involved. As soon as Joel got involved, and I said, well, listen, I always wanted to produce theater. I'm going to get involved. And I picked a friend of mine at Extra who also likes theater. And I said, listen, you're not that busy. I mean, hopefully our boss isn't listening. But I said, look.
I'm going to send this to him immediately.
Thank you. It's a her. And I said, why don't you come on and take the trip with me? I don't know what's going to happen with this, but I know you love theater. We've never done it before. Isn't it exciting to like be doing something we've never done before? And he loved the idea. And I said, I want you to bring in one other person who also feels that way. We right. need like three or four producers. He brought in one of his best friends who he grew up with in Greece. Of all places. They were at the American school. Their parents worked right. there. Was Mark Wolper. Mark Wolper is the son of David L. Wolper, who has a star on the Walk of Fame. He created syndicated television. He did the 1984 Olympics.
Wait, he created syndicated television?
Created syndicated television. When he couldn't get in the 50s, when he couldn't get his show on ABC, NBC, or CBS, he went around and sold it. I forget what the movie was. He had a movie.
Right.
And he sold it to every market around the country.
Individually.
Brilliant.
A Channel 5, a Channel 9, a Channel 43, you know, in Buffalo, in Miami, and wherever, all over the country. And he said, the only thing I require is you all show it at the same time on the same night. And therefore, he created
essentially, yeah.
He cobbled together a network, which we now know as syndicated television. He invented it. That's Mark's dad. He also produced Willy Wonka. He produced Roots. He produced, I mean, and Mark. Very similar stories. And yes. Mark, I often confuse them. I often confuse the two.
Which one was Gene Wilder in?
I forget. Gene Wilder was Chicken Who? Mark is very successful in his own right. He took his father's business over and has been running it for over 20 years, and he has shows on TV, films, documentaries, and everything. Mark was a friend of, talk about friends, they know each other since kids. David at Extra brought Mark on. Mark had a friend who was a record producer who loved musicals, always wanted right. to do something, and he brought Spencer Proffa on. That's how it worked.
How do you guys go about meeting new people? Right, like if somebody walked in the room now and like, hey, I'm Joe, and this is what I do, like, do you entertain that, or like do you go to Old Faithful? Like,
no, I actually entertain that because I have a belief that the next generation is critical. I'm not so sure that I would entertain a 60-year-old producer walking in looking for a job to begin with, but a kid out of college or something, if right. I could be of some use, and there's some reason to connect to it. Obviously, they're not going to have an easy time connecting to me if there isn't some kind of a connection somewhere that gets them to me. But right. I'm in love with this whole thing. I'm, you know, doing the Richie Rich show is a hoot. I'm trying to get involved.
Who plays Richie Rich?
It's like some kid. He's an 11-year-old kid. He's adorable with a very funny cast. And
awesome.
Who knows? Maybe they'll pull it off. You know, they got 13, and then I think Awesomeness makes a decision on whether they're going to stay in production.
Right.
You know, but
Scott, you sing, right?
What?
You sing, don't you?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Don't we all? Don't
go get
we
your guitar
all?
And then we'll do a
Scott,
little.
Scott, we
little
really don't have time for you today. I'm really.
You got bumped.
name drop.
Yeah.
I got a name drop.
You got a name drop. All right.
You just dropped mine.
Oh, that's right. So you made it. You did it, Scott.
Scott's in.
Indeed, Lee.
But I'll tell you, I'm always open to young people. Look, if I weren't open to young people, I wouldn't have a job. I'm the oldest person at Extra. And the fact of the matter is that I work with people who are young enough to be my kids,
right.
who are very smart, qualified producers and writers that blow me away. I mean, some of them are smarter than I ever was at that age. And so I always think it's who the person is. It's not age.
Right.
It's the work. It's the talent. It's also the motivation and how much you really care about what you're doing. And if you do, I'm impressed. I want to meet you.
Right. What do you want people to walk away with after they've worked with you? Like, what do you want? Is it knowledge? Is it a feeling? Like, what do you want to instill in someone?
I would like to think that they've learned something, having seen the process, seen the system, seen my way of approaching actors and approaching producers. I would like to think that there's a learning experience going on there. And I would hope that I try to make work fun. That's what I do. I'm an idiot and a lunatic. Matter of fact, I did some kind of a thing for TV Guide Network about Full House. And the director and the producer came to the house saying, oh, we were waiting to interview you. We interviewed everybody from that show, and they all say that you were a madman. And I keep thinking to myself, my God, that's the first impression they had of me, was that I was a madman. And I'm thinking, well, okay, that's not so bad. There could have been worse impressions than a madman. But then they said, but he's also brilliant. I said, neither of those descriptions.
It's a lethal combination.
It really
in some
is
cases.
Brilliance and madman. I'm thinking, whoa,
you know what
folks.
They say, don't believe your best reviews or your worst.
That's right. Just hang in the middle.
Hang in the middle, probably somewhere in there.
That actually brings up a good point, though. Like, as far as. This is a highly critical business, right?
You betcha.
That episode is horrible. That
Brutal.
Show was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
That actor was horrible. That director sucks. Like, how do you get duck feathers, right, and brush that stuff off?
I basically came up with a definition for myself, but I'm one of those kids who define things for themselves. And I decided that that basically you can't get yourself caught up in the concept of success. Success is what somebody else designates for you. They decide either that you were successful doing a project or you were a failure doing a project. But the fact is the artist can't get involved with that. The artist must learn not only from their successes but from their failures.
Right.
And the artist must continue in the process. Now, of course, if you have enough, quote-unquote, those things that people consider to be a failure, they don't let you work anymore. So we
right.
do understand there is that pressure. But if you make that if that pressure actually forces you to behave differently than you would normally behave, you're doomed. You are doomed. That pressure will only kill you.
Right.
It can't survive.
You also have to be able to filter, I would imagine.
Because some of the criticism,
like, okay, you sucked, blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, I can take these 2 points and apply them.
You very much so.
And the other 25, I'm like, okay.
Yeah, everybody, because reviewers, you learn more about the reviewers than you learn about the project. So you understand who reviewers are,
It could be very tough. And you wince a little.
Water off
time.
A duck's back. Water off a duck's back.
Not exactly, but
oil off a duck's back.
Oil off a duck's back. Yeah, you do wince a little bit, but then you move on, and it gets easier and easier. The thing I could tell young people is that it gets easier and easier as you do the work and you know who you are.
We have to practice taking the punches also. Like,
absolutely.
Speaking of, my name drop, Sugar Ray Leonard was on the show.
Love Sugar Ray.
Nice.
We talked about
that.
This very thing.
You betcha. I betcha.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me that people who are professionals in just about any field are using the exact same vocabulary. I sit there and listen to sports analysis, and I keep on hearing the exact same thing that I constantly talk about, how you have to stay in the moment. You can't be thinking right. outside the moment. You've got to be there
you
at the moment.
You've got to take a punch.
The actors have to be there in the moment. If they're thinking about what they're doing, they're dead meat. They have to be there in the moment.
Right.
The director has to be there in the moment. Hard place to get to, but you can't get there if you're thinking about whether you're going to be a success doing this particular project.
Yeah.
That's why, for me, I have no question about it. Serrano is a massively entertaining show. It is the funniest show that anybody's ever seen, just in terms of dead-out humor.
Yeah.
It is hysterically funny.
And it's not just a great show. It's now time to really launch this thing, and that's why we're going to Indiegogo. That's really why we're doing it. We want to get this out to as many people. We don't want to go through the tried and true Broadway community people who have a very narrow way of doing things. They're very nice. We've met a lot of nice people.
Right.
But it's a very closed society. And, you know, we always feel like we'll just do it.
Is there a disadvantage to going the Indiegogo route? Does it feel too rogue for the industry?
No, we have no choice now. We've tried to break into the quote-unquote New York industry.
Sure.
And they everybody favorable, loved the show, but when it came time to plunking money down, all of a sudden they were waiting for the money to come somewhere else first.
Right.
They would all come in if we had the money up front, so they knew that we...
Like, well, if I had the money, I wouldn't be here.
That's the theory. Yes. I wouldn't be coming to you if I had the money.
Right.
But essentially, you know, so we played the
and
game
And we felt
there.
it was more important to spend some money, which we did, on developing the script, on making sure Joel could attract actors, that we could find the people, so that the work would speak for itself.
Well, that also, I think that speaks to the way the world operates today, right? Like, you know, artists are getting record deals because they have a body of work and an audience and a brand and all these things already built and packaged, and all the record label has to do is go, okay, cool. Like,
this is a no-brainer.
Multiply that. Exactly.
This is a no-brainer.
Right? As opposed to, like, taking a risk on, okay, I heard you sing in my office, and let's see if we can develop you.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting.
So, name dropping moment.
Feel free.
All right. When I was singing with Carol,
I've only done one.
Carol had left the cosigns because she became Carol King. What a choice she made, but nonetheless.
Were you a singer? Well, like, what did you do in the choir?
Okay. I was a tenor in the group, in our doo-wop group.
He was the boy tenor.
I was the boy tenor, four-part harmony. But at any rate, when we had the teenagers, Frankie Lyman and the teenagers back in the 50s, well, Frankie Lyman died in an accident when he was 14 years old.
Yes.
And the producers, Ahmet Erdogan at Atlantic Records, was looking to, they had this concept, dumbest concept ever heard. They thought maybe it'd be fun if they brought in a little white boy to replace Frankie Lyman with the teenagers. And I auditioned to replace Frankie Lyman and the teenagers. I didn't get it, by the way. And they decided.
How did you feel about that at the time?
It made no difference to me. I didn't know what. Oh, how cool is this? I can get to sing with the teenagers.
Right.
You know, it didn't had no color in my mind at all. I was just blind to everything else. I was just doing my thing. So no, I didn't become the next Frankie Lyman.
Work out?
What?
I guess it didn't work out.
That one didn't work out. No,
you wouldn't be sitting here today.
No, yeah, no.
Really. As far as Indiegogo goes, and thanking the public for being a part of this experience, and what are some of the perks that you guys are offering, and how much money are you trying to raise?
We're trying to raise
$4 million.
$100,000,
which is big. Okay. That's a lot.
It's a lot, but we could we can run Serrano for 12 weeks, and that's what we want to do. At the Matrix Theater, one of the iconic theaters.
And
it's great. It's a lovely, lovely theater. That's the fellow who owns the Matrix is somebody that Joel used to act with, and I knew as a producer when I worked at Paramount. Again, these
connections.
We were not big people then. It was all the people starting out and getting to know each other.
Right.
Those are the people to stick with. I can't say it enough.
Mm.
Anyway, Joe Stern, who owns the Matrix, likes our project, likes what it's about, and he said, come on, do it over here, and we're going to pay for it, but we got a nice rate. We're going to work it out with him, and he may jump in. We don't know, but he loves the project and wants to be somehow involved with it. We'll see what that means. So the perks, for $1, for $5, for $25, for $50, you can get T-shirts and, you know, all the usual things.
Signed scripts.
And as you get up to 50, and not for a lot, maybe 25 or 50. I don't have it in front of me. But
you can
if you come to the play, you can come backstage, meet the cast,
have
your picture taken with them. At a $50 or $100 level, you also get a CD of the music, get two tickets to the show. We got a lot of those kinds of gifts that would really be fun to have. At the higher levels, we're giving away a few really interesting things. I've been very fortunate. Extra is letting me award an extra experience, which means I will personally take somebody behind the scenes of a shoot at Extra when Mario Lopez is there.
Wow.
You'll be there with him. You'll take your picture with
him. There'll be a lot of women.
Absolutely.
A little bit,
yeah. It's like thousands of dollars.
And you can take your picture with any celebrity that's there, and then we'll take you to either a set visit or a red carpet, because it all depends on what's going on.
Right.
Where you'll be able to take the Extra mic and interview a celebrity.
Oh, nice.
And we'll record it for you. Obviously, it won't go on the air, but we'll give it to you as a kind of keepsake. Where you'll be an extra reporter for the day. So that's one in it, and that's really
that's a
primo. We're
awesome
giving out
perk.
Three of those. So that's pretty cool. Joel is doing something that's, if I was starting out today, I would buy what Joel is offering, because you can't find this. Do you want to tell them what it is? You're offering two versions of it, which I think, you know.
Well, it's whatever, but essentially a chance to shadow me on an episode that I'm directing 5 days, from the first reading all the way through the last shot being taken. For anybody who's interested, perhaps in how the process works, and some starting to meet people around the set, and it's interesting. Everybody has a different kind of a flavor, and you start to get known on the set, shadowing, and
right. And Joel makes himself available for Q&A and to
that,
introduce
yeah.
people to it.
So you guys reserve the right to refuse service to anyone?
No.
someone questionable gives up that $25,000 and they show up like, shoes, no service?
They put up
$25,000.
They can do anything.
We'll find a way to take your money. But it's a very exciting. Joel's offering the same thing. For people who are interested in theater, to shadow him for 1 week during rehearsals
For Serrano.
The same thing, make himself and the cast available for questions and learn about it. You can't buy this stuff. You really can't.
Yeah.
Actually, now you can. But I just thought you actually can do this with us.
You're a liar, Steve.
I am a liar. But this is the first time you could actually do it. Those are the ones that are phenomenal. And there are a lot of gifts. One, our composer, Robert Tepper, who's a brilliant composer, he's going to do this for two people. He will cut your demo. He has his own studio. He will cut your demo, and if you can't sing, he will find the vocalist. He'll make the arrangements, the orchestrations. He'll get the musicians. He'll cut it, and you'll walk away with a demo of whatever your song is.
Wow,
that's big. I like.
He's going to give two
Scott,
of those.
Yes?
Scott, you got your shot.
Yeah. I mean, and we're trying to find...
I mean, it'll cost you some money.
Yeah. We're trying to find some unique gifts, but we don't want to forget people who can only afford a dollar or five or 25 or 50.
Yeah.
You can also get some really nice keepsakes and get to see the show in some cases, get a CD, get to meet the cast. So it'll be a theater experience either way, no matter what you give.
That's great. The show is called Innovation Crush. What out in the world do you see that you are crushing on that is innovative? Like, is there something you see, a trend? You were talking about your iPhone that you hate earlier.
I do.
But is there something in technology and culture in your own businesses?
For me, it's what we said before, is the fact that the people who own the means of distribution are now being able to make their own product. And it's adding to the amount of work that exists for creative people all over the place. And it's why it's not the only reason I'm on this show, but I'm interested in this. I'm interested in Richie Rich's. I'm interested in where all this is coming from. This is the new energy that's going to drive the networks to have to produce different kind of stuff that are going to challenge the networks. And it's coming from the bottom up.
That's great.
My favorite thing, which is, I mean, it feels like we've been doing it for 5 years, but it's actually only a year or two old, is binge watching. I mean, it's so new relative, but it feels like it's been around for a while, you know. And my wife and I started it with Breaking Bad. We watched everything. We watched all of the episodes of 5.5 seasons or 60, whatever it was. We did it in about a week and a half. And afterwards, I thought I was dealing methamphetamine. I mean, it was like, I felt like I had white powder on.
Steve, you were dealing methamphetamine.
I mean, it was so bizarre. I felt like I needed rehab after it was over, but it was such a great, intense experience. And I love that. To me, this is like... This is my candy store. I just love it.
No, that's funny. There was a concept that I was thinking of before as far as like binge watching goes. Because remember, they used to be like, we're going to show a marathon.
The marathon.
That's right.
You know,
but it took two days.
That's right.
I think, like you said, binge watching necessarily isn't new, but the way we do it now is like, it's choice oriented. Like, you can.
I just like the idea that I could. You know,
on demand.
I get whatever
on
I
demand.
Want. That is so appealing. Yeah, you know, to me, that's the new sexy.
On demand is the new sexy.
It certainly is.
Get sexy on demand.
Sexy on demand. That's what I say. Sexy on demand. I can do that.
Last but not least, complete this phrase for me. Either of you can elect to go first. You actually have to go first in this one, Joel. You pointed. Innovation to me is.
Innovation to me is basically taking materials and stuff that have existed since the beginning of time and finding a new way to package them that's refreshing, that's different, that's interesting, that isn't tied down to specific lengths of time or anything.
I like it.
I don't know if this makes sense, but it's being open to the future. Just being open.
Yeah.
And looking at everything and say, oh, that's interesting. What's that? Until it's not interesting and move on.
Right.
But everything should be interesting, even if it's for a nanosecond, and then move
on. That's true. I think the inverse of that, too, you kind of touched on this earlier, is like being naturally curious about things, right?
Naturally curious about things. You got to care.
That's part of the being open. Like if you're like, oh, I don't want to go to eat in a restaurant where there's no, the lights are out. Like, it's a really great experience.
Octopus. Who eats octopus?
Exactly. Old boy. Where can people find out more about the project? On the internets, on the webs, your cell phone numbers?
Yeah, what they could do is they could go to Indiegogo.com and then Serrano the Musical.
All right.
And that's going to be on August 11th. Dare I say a date?
There we go. Sure. Okay. Feel free.
August 11th is when it's going to go up officially.
We'll put this up in October.
Thank you.
There you go. When it give us the most help.
Yeah, you'll get your reward next year.
Oh, you mean we could have gotten
So it's Indiegogo.com, Serrano the Musical.
Okay. Got it. And I want to thank you both.
Oh, this is a pleasure. This was terrific. This was,
glad you guys made it.
This was almost painless.
It was just. Almost painless. It'll be the name of my autobiography.
That's right.
Well, thank you, everybody. This has been another installment of Innovation Crush, and we will talk to you next time.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.